Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:55 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 30th, and Google was down $100 in here today, and that is a direct response to the earnings that were announced after the close yesterday. And we can see that this is a very clear and large downside key reversal, a weekly key reversal, in fact. If I zoom in a little here, you'll see that the peak back in January of last year was also a very clear downside key reversal. So this is a peak of at least near-term significance. It's also a failed upside break. The dynamic of the failure is larger than the dynamic of the breakout. It suggests that we're in for at least a pause, even potentially a retest of the $1,000 area. Then the big question is whether it is going to find support at that area. What I was particularly surprised by was the announcement by one of Google's spokesmen in the aftermath of the earnings announcement, where the old chestnut of that 90% of all retail trade is offline in the USA was trotted out. That's remarkably out of date. That's the fallback position for anybody who's trying to justify continued growth, but it really is something that is used to obfuscate the fact that just about all of the low-hanging fruit in the retail in the e-commerce sector have already been picked. The mortgage sector, the healthcare sector, and the automotive sector are all considered to be offline retail, and they represent at least 75% of total retail transactions that have very little chance of Google being able to move in and get some advertising revenue from, so or at least more than they're already getting. So, for a senior executive of one of the world's most advanced technology companies to trot out this kind of statement, it does stink of desperation. That was something that was the thing that really stuck in my mind on hearing that. Well, when we look at the chart action, we have definitely lost uptrend consistency. This rally that has been persisting now for 4 months was incredibly impressive. It bounced exactly where it needed to. But it's going to have to hold that $1,000 area. That is a very large psychological Rubicon. And the very significant pullback we've seen in here today, in part because of lower earnings, but also in part because of additional costs of policing YouTube. YouTube has had two major oops moments in the last month. The first was the difficulty they had in trying to take down the video of the New Zealand massacre. But then there was also the artificial intelligence mistake when significant numbers of videos of the Notre Dame fire were posted. Then the artificial intelligence decided that that was, or it started attaching labels to it that it was 9/11. Now, obviously, it was two large buildings burning down, but there are some very clear differences, and obviously, that is a major mistake for the artificial intelligence. So, that also helped to highlight that there has been enormous progress made in artificial intelligence, but that we are still really at the beginning of that. If we're if Google had been willing to talk about how much additional work they're doing in artificial intelligence, how they're going to solve those kinds of problems, then that potentially would have moderated the decline. The other point, of course, is that they are trying to accelerate Waymo and autonomous driving. That represents a very clear growth trajectory for the company, but that's also a segment of the company that has not derived any income yet. So there is obviously a bit of a wait and see with regard to that particular segment of their business. And then if we look at Microsoft, well, we have a very different environment. And in fact, Microsoft is currently the largest share in the world. And it popped on the upside following its earnings. And it is now really quite overextended. I don't think that there is any exaggeration to say that the pace of the advance is picking up. There has been a clear acceleration over the course of the last 4 months, that price has pretty much just gone vertical. So that does suggest that we are in pretty hot territory. Now, if we pull back and look at the much wider perspective, well, then the peak put in back in 2000 is a very distant memory. This has been an incredible advance, and there's no sign yet that it is over, but it is certainly becoming overextended in the short term. What Microsoft has very effectively done has been to adopt a subscription business model, and then it is also starting to provide more of a service as our software as a service business as part of that subscription business model. And that is streamlining cash flows. It's making the sales process much more accommodative, and that is helping to not only produce more reliable cash flows, but then it also attracts a higher multiple because it's more readily, I think, applicable to apply the dividend discount model to those cash flows. Well, that's really two very different outcomes for two very large shares. The S&P 500 was in negative territory in here today, but not in any kind of dynamic fashion. And in fact, it was down less than 1 point. When we look at the Dow Jones, well, it is inordinately affected by what goes on with Boeing, but it was able to squeak out an advance in here today and was able to unwind all of the intraday decline. But of course, Boeing represents by far the largest weighting within that rather concentrated index, and they're continuing to labor with the 737 MAX. So the share is in hiatus mode until we get additional information on that. Well, what I find rather interesting is not so much that we haven't had very clear downward dynamics, but rather that we've had a lot of single stock volatility over the during this earnings season. Well, that's, I think, also representative of differing fortunes for differing companies. But what most people seem to be really concerned about is the slowing global economy. And what stock markets are telling us is that they are already pricing in a recovery. So the most important thing is that a lot of these economic indicators and economic statistics that are being quoted in the media are reported with a rather significant lag. The stock market is pricing in that we are going to have additional monetary and potentially fiscal stimulus. That's certainly already the case in China, and the stock market was up there today for the first day, and following a seven-session pullback. It's right in the region now of the progression of higher reaction lows. This has been the deepest pullback we've seen since January, so we're at an important area of potential support around the 3,300 level, and certainly it needs to do better than simply advance on the day, but we need upward dynamics similar to what we saw at the beginning of April to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I do think it is likely that is what we're going to see. The banking sector was up in a reasonably dynamic manner yesterday and followed through on the upside in here today. And it pulled back less than the wider market. The fact is that following the Party Congress, the banks have been ordered to make more capital available to the corporate sector, and that is stimulative. Of course, we're not going to see markets going up in a straight line, though. What I think is also rather important is that Tencent Holdings has pulled away from the region of its trend mean. It had rallied impressively from the lows back at the beginning of December, so it did bottom early. In fact, it also declined early, but the fact that it has now been able to pull away from the region of the trend mean, then that is I think, rather positive news. Well, when we then think about what is happening in terms of government bonds, because if we are at the top of the interest rate cycle, and there is an increasing possibility that we're going to have additional monetary and fiscal stimulus, well, then that robs investors of the argument that we're going to see a buyer's hiatus. Because if central banks start to push back into this market, well, then it is going to compress yields. And we saw that the pop up in yield today was not sustained, and it's right back down to that psychological 2.5% level. But I think perhaps the better chart at present is to look at the futures chart, where we have a progression of higher reaction lows. It has found support in the region of the trend mean. Then it rallied again to 125, and now it is looking increasingly likely that it has found support in the region of the upper side of that underlying trading range. This reaction is relatively similar to the reaction we saw right at the beginning of the year, and this is looking like a reasonably similar sized consolidation. In other words, the Treasury futures price is starting to trend consistently, and that is the clearest vote possible that investors are voting with their feet, and they are concluding that we are at the top of the interest rate cycle. The Federal Reserve is not going to raise rates again. In fact, it's unlikely that any major central bank is going to do so, and that there is a clear potential of that they are going to be willing to tolerate higher inflation. They're going to be willing to tolerate a somewhat hotter economy, because the last thing they want is a recession. And that really does hold out the prospect that one of David's Fullerisms was that central banks are serial bubble blowers. And there is a real possibility that that is exactly what we're seeing right now. That the intention of central banks to walk away from the punch bowl and let it to continue to overflow rather than removing it is going to result in a hangover eventually, but not until the music stops. I'm very much reminded of Chuck Prince. And what that suggests is that, yes, we do have a short-term overbought condition on stock markets, but that there is a real potential that we're going to see additional upside on stock markets, and that that is going to represent a climactic event. We could clearly see a melt-up occur. Now we also are seeing that there's an increasingly large number of IPOs hitting the market. Well, I'm very much reminded again of another one of David's Fullerisms, and the best time to sell your company is when you think you can get more for it than you think it's worth. And we are seeing that Lyft, for example, bounced rather well yesterday, and it was pretty much unchanged in here today. So that was one of the failed IPOs, where it pulled back almost from the first day of trading. But there have been better ones. Pinterest, for example, has been trading for about a week, and today was the first down day. So that was a meaningful advance from below 20 to up to $35 in the space of a week is a pretty significant move. It's down over 10% in here today, though, so that suggests a peak of at least near-term significance. One of the best performing IPOs over the course of the last few years has been Twilio. And the share is up about 700% since the beginning of 2018. But it is trading on a valuation of $1,390. So they do have earnings, or they wouldn't have an estimate at all. But the much bigger point is that they need to continue to grow at an incredibly fast pace in order to justify that multiple. Well, the share price is still reasonably consistent, and it has still got this sequence of higher reaction lows, and as long as it is holding the $120 area, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, the other very high PE share that everyone knows about is Netflix, and the share has been steadying around the $350 area. This is another company that is has got a long way to achieve profitability, and it's arguable whether they will ever be able to achieve profitability. That valuation is now down to 106. It's not so long ago it was at almost 400. So there is the potential that some of these companies can continue to grow, but of course the problem for them is that they need to persist in growing. It's not that they can just simply put in a couple of years of strong growth. They need to continue to grow at a very fast clip in order to justify their existence. And of course, the number one company in that bracket is Amazon. And the share was off its lows in here today. It has continued to extend its advance. One thing I certainly know about Amazon is that they are finding increasingly they have an increasingly large number of ways to try and squeeze additional revenue out of sellers. Then prices on Amazon are also rising. Part of the reason for that is because of rising shipping costs. But then Amazon is also starting to move into the shipping broking sector. That was a piece of news that came out yesterday. Well, that is going to improve Amazon's margins, but it is likely to decimate the broking business. In fact, shipping broking is one of the only broking businesses still around where they still have really quite attractive margins. Amazon is pushing back up towards the $2,000 area, and they are looking increasingly likely that we're going to get some consolidation around that $2,000 area. But the share paused at 500, and it paused at 1,000, and it paused at 1,500, and it definitely paused at 2,000. We had a very significant pullback. But then, of course, people have been buying the dips, and anyone who has been buying the dips has been richly rewarded. And if one expected it to pause at 2,000, well, then the next place that someone is probably likely to think about it pausing would be 2,500. And that is why people would have been buying the dip back in January. So as long as that pattern remains intact, then people are going to remain reasonably sanguine about Amazon. But if it fails, and if it pulls back below the trend mean, most particularly if it pulls back below $1,500, well, then that will be a very different scenario. So we are approaching a rather interesting juncture now for, again, another one of the largest companies in the world. Well, when we look at the fact that central banks are very likely to be abusing their fiat currencies for the foreseeable future, gold prices have started to stabilize again from the $1,275 area. This represents the region of the trend mean. It's a natural area where we can anticipate some support starting to come back in. This is a lengthy base formation already. It began back in 2013, but we're not going to have clear, I think, evidence that the base has been completed until we see a sustained move above $1,380. Rather think that that is a significant possibility, particularly in view of the fact that currencies are under threat from the potential that the way that all these incredible debts are going to get paid back is in devalued currency. So that is positive for gold and the precious metals, and it's also positive for the oil price, and oil today was in positive territory, although moderately so. If the extent of the reaction is less than $5, then this is still nothing more than a range within an otherwise consistent trend. And as long as that remains the case, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. If we look at some of the commodity-related currencies, Well, the Australian dollar had got all the way down to 70 last week. We've had a minor bounce, but certainly nothing in the way of upward dynamics to really confirm demand coming back in a big way at the lower side of this range. And there is still a medium-term sequence of lower rally highs that is very much intact. Then the South African rand, which has been reasonably steady over the course of the last few months, but it has not been able to sustain a move through the 200-day moving average. As long as it is trading below 14, well, or the dollar is trading above 14, then we can, I think, give the dollar the benefit of the doubt. That's, I think, a significant factor. One of the standouts has been the Mexican peso, and that is below the trend mean. The dollar is now testing its sequence of higher reaction lows, and it really does need to sustain a move above the trend mean in order to question the potential for the peso to continue to outperform. Now, if we look at some of the major currencies, the euro was in reasonably positive territory in here today, and it has come back above the 1.12 area. So now the bigger question is whether it is going to break the sequence of lower rally highs. We had an inconsistency in that trend back in the middle of March, but it was very quickly countermanded. There is, I think, the potential that the euro is going to rally further, but it has a lot of work to do if it's going to break its medium-term downtrend. And the pound today was up by approximately a cent, and that's the first upward dynamic we've seen in at least a month. Well, I think the much broader picture is the pound has been putting in support over much of the last 9 months. It's back above the 130 area. I do think that there is potential for additional upside here. It's looking increasingly likely that at the very least there is probably going to be some sort of fudge on Brexit, and that is assuming it happens at all. And if that's the case, well, then there is the clear potential for the pound to continue to outperform and to unwind more of the major decline put in back in 2016. When we look at the pound versus the euro, it has got first step above the base characteristics. And what that suggests is the market has concluded that the UK is going to remain a lot closer to the EU than anyone thought in the aftermath of the Brexit vote. Well, when we look at what's going on in the UK stock market, with the strength of the pound, then that is potentially a headwind for the UK stock market in nominal terms, most particularly for the FTSE 100. It's less of a factor for the FTSE 250. And I think the most important thing that this index has done has been to rebound from those lows back in December. This index has a history of pulling back in a violent manner, and each one of those pullbacks has been higher than the last. As long as that remains the case, then this choppy uptrend can continue to be given the benefit of the doubt. Well, I think that there is certainly scope for some pause and consolidation. We're still moving through earnings season, so we're definitely getting more single stock volatility. But the action that we're getting in the bond markets is clearly concluding that investors are pricing in the potential for additional stimulus. Well, we haven't quite got the stimulus yet, and we may need to see an additional pullback in order to really animate central banks to action. But I do think it's rather inevitable that we're going to get some form of additional stimulus, and that is likely to contribute to additional upside for markets. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.